everybody. Welcome to the Android Central Podcast. This is episode 176, and you might notice that I don't look or sound anything like Phil Nickenson. That's because Phil Nickenson is not here. He's getting pulled away by much more important duties, although hard to think anything's more important than the Android Central Podcast. You can give him a hell about that later. I am joined, however, by the normal crew here. We have Jerry in West Virginia.
Howdy, howdy.
And let's see, one of the two Brits, we have Richard in England.
We have both of the two Brits.
Yeah. And we have Alex, the other Brit.
Things are evened up now.
Brit. We you know what? We need to call them Englishmen.
Englishmen.
Give them some class.
They're English gentlemen.
Yeah, fair something enough. Like that. I don't know. I feel like any way that we refer to them, we just say they're from England as if they're just from the whole country. We say the states for Jerry and I and Phil. I don't.
But your states are bigger than our country, most of them. So
very, very true, actually. Yeah. Phil's anyways, is probably pretty close.
So what's been going on?
That has nothing to do with Android whatsoever, actually, where we live. But we do have a lot of Android news kicking off. Android Wear, I guess, that happened. I don't know. We had a special podcast about it. But just in case you didn't, what do you think, Jerry? Do you want to give us that one-minute wrap-up of, you know, kind of what happened?
Oh, I wasn't prepared for that. Google came out and said, here's a version of Android that works really good on some watches. Here's a little bit about it. We're going to have more as it comes along. Here's a sneak preview for developers. Then, boom, LG jumps out and says, hey, check out our watch. It's big and it's square and it's sexy. No sooner than LG was finished, Motorola jumps out and says, here's our watch. It's even sexier. It's round. You're going to love it. And it just ballooned from there. It's what we've all been waiting for if you're a smartwatch fan. Somebody like Google or Apple to step in and give it their spin.
Mm-hmm.
And the biggest thing, I think, is finally getting this Google Now experience onto a watch. It's the sort of thing we've been talking about for the past year where it makes so much sense that it couldn't really not happen. But we've still been waiting on it. We've been waiting till we see mock-ups and stuff and concepts that people have come up with. But we've been waiting to see what Google's final vision of, or their first vision, rather, of what a smartwatch UI should look like, how it should interface with a phone. And really, we've got a really great idea now of how Android at the platform level is going to adapt to this new form factor. We'll probably see much more out of this at I/O, I think.
I agree.
Yeah, and that's the thing you said. It's about Google Now on the wrist, and that's really, the interface is pretty much just cards. You know, it's the Google Now cards, except for it's pulling in all of your notifications. So we should say it only works with devices Android 4.3 and above, but there's a good reason for that. There's notification listener APIs in 4.3 and above that let the watch pull in every single notification that arrives on your phone to just pull onto your wrist, and it formats it in a nice little card, shows what application sent it, and gives you a little truncated list of what the notification says. So it could be Gmail, it could be a notification from QuizUp, you know, or 75 notifications from QuizUp, it could be whatever. And it'll stack them all together. If you get multiples, it'll let you swipe to the right and read more of an email, and then swipe even further and reply to an email via voice. And then developers can go even farther there, and they can, you know, come in with some cool stuff. Now there's a preview SDK and all that right now that is kind of, you know, we're not talking about that publicly because I don't think you're supposed to. I haven't, you know, I'm not the SDK kind of type. But what we can look at is just kind of the concept videos they're showing off, and I think it looks pretty darn awesome.
Yeah, a couple of really important things here, I think. The first thing is that this is probably the first really decent full-featured smartwatch UI we've seen. You know, we've had Pebble, which is very, very basic, still button-based. Decent for what it does, but still very, very rudimentary by, you know, the standards of Android. We've had the Gear, which is improving, I think, but still you're still basically just swiping between, you know, four icons on a page or just a bunch of icons and dealing with sort of full screen blocks of things that you then swipe between. This, I think, is going to take it to the next level. We've got a very sort of distinctive Google look to it, and I guess what we're not talking about really yet is apps, you know, standalone apps actually running on the phone the same way as they do you know, with the two that we're familiar with the Pebble, because that's obviously got its own ecosystem with the Gear, which that has its own SDK as well.
I don't think I'm not going to say there aren't going to be any apps that run on the, you know, the watch itself. Mm. But
I mean, we're just not talking about that yet, are we? That's probably
right. I think the whole idea, though, is that your phone's going to be doing all this heavy lifting. Your watch is going to, and this is all just a guess. Like Alex said, we're just guessing at this point. I can imagine it's going to be like Google Glass, where your watch can be connected to Wi-Fi, even if it's not paired with a phone, and it can get your Gmail stuff from your Google account. You know, I don't know if that's baked in right now in this stage we're at, or if that's for the future, but I would think that'd be fairly easy to pull off, you know, just like Google Glass. But anything else...
Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, there's... I don't foresee a Foursquare app for the Moto 360 or the LG G Watch. I would see Foursquare using the new APIs to integrate with the watch, and it's... You know, you
I think
can
that's an interesting point, really, because if you look at what's been going on with Pebble now, you know, the Pebble 2.0 stuff, so the onus is on you to go and download these apps for your watch, whereas if you think of it as more of an extension of the app that's already on your phone, then it sort of sidestep a lot of the problems of just having to manage manage battery life on the watch, you know, worry about third-party developers just draining the watch's battery. And, you know, if you instead have it hooking into the stuff that's going on the phone, then that's a little bit easier to deal with.
And honestly, all the stuff that we get from, like, Google Now and Google Maps, Hangouts, Gplot, you know, all the stuff that Google just gives us, I mean, personally speaking, that would probably be good enough for me on a smartwatch. You know, notifications, directions when I'm out in a strange place, that kind of thing, without even thinking about going beyond that and third-party developers getting involved and seeing what they can do with it.
Exactly. I do not want to try to use a keyboard on my watch, or, you know, I don't want to try to answer email from my watch. Answering a phone call, that's great. You know, maybe speaking to your wrist for a quick message, that's okay too. But anything that's involving a lot of touch and a lot of interaction, a watch isn't the way that to go there.
It's not natural, is it? It's not a natural. Right. It's not a natural motion to hold your wrist up and be doing that. And maybe that's why where Pebbles is kind of less intrusive with the buttons, because we're all, you know, if you've ever worn a real watch, you're used to having, you know, a little button or a winder or something on the side. So I think we didn't really see much of it in the Moto 360 Hangout, but the brief kind of glimpses and brief little sort of interactions that did go on, it looks very much like it's kind of pulled a little bit of what we know from the Gear. You know, so you've obviously got the swipes and just quick gestures so that it's still, so you can still dismiss things, but without getting too kind of fiddly and having to, because, you know, like you, Jerry, I don't want to type things on a watch. It's too small.
Right, and if you think what makes the Pebble so great and what we all like about it is that it just pulls in your notifications, it shows the information there, you can scroll through an email and read it, and then you hit the center button, you dismiss it, and then it's done. You've figured it out. But what's the nice thing about this is that when you archive or delete something on an Android Wear device, it's going to also clear that notification back on the phone. So when you hit delete on that email, it's going to be deleted. It's, you know, you're getting the two-way communication, which is something that Pebble just can't really do.
Yeah, I mean, you dismiss a bunch of stuff on Pebble, you still would go back and deal with all the notifications later on. It's basically just a dumb terminal to what's already on the phone.
And Andrew, you know, mentioned it a little bit earlier. Part of the SDK, you agree not to share apps and you know, all this other nonsense. Same thing with the Chromecast. They don't want you to, you know, put too much of it out there for people because it's all subject to change. But what we see right now, the part of the jar file that's included in the SDK preview has a feature where it can send an intent back to your phone. Read your email on your watch, press the reply button, pick your phone, and the box is already up ready for you to type your reply in. That's cool. Handy, yeah.
And that's actually something Samsung was doing, I think, on the Gear. because obviously that's has roots deep into TouchWiz, and so you can do that if you have if you're relying on the Samsung email app, there was a feature where you could just go in there and it would already know the message that you just read.
The flow of the UI, the gestures and the big circular button action buttons remind me a lot of the Gear. The recent software update for the Gear. Samsung did a lot of things right, and I'm not saying Google copied anyone because this has probably been in production for a long, long time. But it tells me that maybe that's the natural way to do it if two different companies came to the same conclusion. To be honest, and a lot of people are going to send in hate mail about this, I can't wait to see what Apple does with it. Because Samsung, Pebble made it from nothing. Samsung took what Pebble had and they did Samsung to it and made it do everything. Google pared it down to a Google-centric device. I think Apple's going to come in and make it elegant.
And that's what Samsung's kind of an interesting point because they were listed as one of the partners, weren't they?
Yep.
They have their new range of smart watches coming out now, Gear 2 Neo and the Gear Fit, all of which are Tizen. And I guess a company as large as Samsung could have two distinct smartwatch lines, but that would be kind of weird if they did.
You would think.
So I don't know. Could we be going from Galaxy Gear to Gear 2 back to Galaxy Gear 3, do you think?
Maybe. I think a lot of that's going to depend on how the Tizen watch performs and sells. If it's a smash hit, Samsung's not going to abandon that.
Right.
I don't blame them.
Well, and what Samsung might want to abandon, though, is what they might not want to abandon is they have complete control over the way the Gear looks. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you, of course, the original Galaxy Gear, they had total control as well because that wasn't Google Play certified or whatever. But if you're doing a watch with Android Wear, supposedly you're going to have to, more than likely you're going to have to deal with Google's requirements. There's going to be some stuff that you just can't customize.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll know more about that as it plays out. Right now, I think what we've seen from LG and what we've seen from Motorola is two companies that worked very close with Google to build the first versions that had a lot of input from Google itself. Whether some of the things are mandatory that they had to do or not mandatory, they're there because they worked really well for what Google had planned.
And we're going to learn a lot about LG's watch. They're saying second quarter release. And it was kind of interesting because LG showed the least amount when they announced it. They just showed a kind of a weird three-quarter shot of just the watch face. And it was highlighted in the promotional videos, but those are all just, renders and all that. So Motorola is showing off the hardware a lot. And it'll be interesting to see, we're going to learn a lot about LGs in a short amount of time, all in a span of a couple of months.
I think the thing
Go ahead.
I think the thing that kind of excites me the most about it as well is the fact that it's designed to work with round watch faces as well, because I don't know about anybody else, but wearing something, Pebble's okay, but it's not round. I like round watches. They feel the most watch-like, they feel the most comfortable for me to wear. And until Google's come along with Android Wear, we've just got these, basically, we've just got like a slimmed-down smartphone or, that kind of shape just strapped to our wrists. So that's that excites me about the Moto 360 because from what we've seen so far, it looks like a watch.
Yeah, it looks really good. The G-Watch kind of strikes me as here's a developer watch. You go to I/O, this is probably what they're going to send you away with. The basic sort of bare bones, Google experience watch, if you like. Whereas Moto's looks more like it's their vision of what they want to do with a smartwatch, and it's going to be one of the first, but probably not the first or the reference device. That's mostly just guesswork, but that's
I would agree with all of those guesses. I have no inside information either, but that sounds absolutely logical.
Well, let's see. People have been lighting up the Q&A with lots of Android Wear questions, so let's pop through a couple of these. Let's see. Dan says, will Android Wear / Moto 360 be the end of Pebble as we know it? And I think the end of that sentence is probably pretty interesting.
I don't think so, because there is always going to be a market for the $99 smartwatch that's Bluetooth, can work with multiple platforms, and forwards your texts and phone calls. These things aren't going to be cheap. Let's be honest. you know, the Moto 360 or the LG G Watch, you're going to be, I guarantee you're talking 250 plus.
Oh, I mean, you think that low for the Moto 360?
No, I'm guessing. It's not going to be, there's no way it can be under that. You can't build one cheaper than that, I don't think. So no, if
I don't think so either.
If Pebble knocks the price back another 30, you know, 129, 119, they'll still sell a lot of them because it does what it does really well.
Mm-hmm. And
a couple of options for them. I think that, like you say, there's always going to be a market for the lower end stuff, and they're well established with that now. They're a generation ahead of where they were. They have the money and the scale to be able to just churn out these cheap smartwatches, and, you know, of course, they have the partners with Best Buy and others to get them to market really quickly.
Before you take it to the next, they also don't have the stigma of being low end, because right now they're not low end. So I think that's bits with what you were saying.
I do think that maybe Pebble eventually needs an answer to this, whether the answer is, okay, we're on board with Android Wear as a partner and we're going to have a high-end watch separate to, you know, our Pebble ecosystem. They could do that, but then things get a bit interesting because, well, you already have the Pebble App Store, and if you have a Pebble that isn't in the Pebble App Store, then how do you handle that? They're in a bit of a tricky situation with how they handle the high-end stuff if they do something that is Android-based. And, if they do something in the high-end space that isn't Android-based, then they're going to be competing not only with Apple, but also with the other large smartwatch ecosystem out there from Google.
Let's see here. I think a lot of people have been asking this, but let's see. Graham asked, do you think Google Glass will be updated to use Android Wear? That's kind of an interesting line. I mean, it is something you wear,
isn't it?
So I would like to see
it. I would imagine that has something to do with it.
I would think that's a wise move. It's bad enough having two versions of Android, three versions of Android if you count whatever they're going to do in the living room. It'd be nice to get all these converged into one. Mm-hmm. And I think the UI that we've seen in the videos would go over really well on Glass. It's very close to what's there now.
And I think it's kind of it would kind of add a different paradigm to Glass, because right now Glass is really focused on, you use this My Glass app, you install apps to the device, and then it kind of manages its own data, and it does things on its own. You know, maybe this could be a way for Glass to, you know, slim down a little bit and try to do a little less on its own, and kind of, you know, do this notification listening like the watches are set to do.
And the battery will last more than 30 minutes.
That would be fantastic, yeah.
The thing is, you're surely not going to have the two. Oh,
it's Android Wear, not Android for smartwatches. Smartwatches are just the first step of this. So if you imagine what's the other main wearable device that people are aware of, well, it's Google Glass-like devices, it's smart glasses. Surely that's the second step, if the first step is going to be smartwatches this summer.
You're not going to wear them both at the same, well... You might.
You know I'm gonna.
Yeah, I found myself leaving the house with Pebble on my wrist and Glass on, and it just feels kind of stupid. On top of Glass just feeling kind of stupid on its own.
When a Hangout message comes in and everything goes off at one time, you realize this is too much.
Let's see. I think we should probably wrap up the Android Wear. We also forget that there was... We already did a Hangout just for Android Wear already, episode 175, that you can go view.
That was the bosses, and we don't care what they have to say. We want to say what we want.
Well, if you would like Phil's perspective, at least, because Phil isn't here to talk. I mean, this is just going to be we'll be talking about Android Wear for, you know, months and months and months to come. Absolutely. But there is, you know, there are other things going on. I think Jerry well put it as phones we all want, but we can't buy yet. Obviously we have this HTC One stuff coming out. We have promotional material showing up in carrier stores. We have, you know, people, you know, contests for carriers to win one when it comes out. What are we looking forward to the most right now? I mean, it's kind of the hype machine has kind of like been, you know, maybe overplayed at this point as we're 4 days away.
It's been an interesting kind of hype, hasn't it? Because we're coming up to what is going to be the retail launch of this thing. We know in the UK it's coming out on March 25th, and you'll actually be able to go out and buy it like an hour after the event at Coffin Warehouse. Some stuff from Verizon today, it's looking like possibly they're going to have a 1 p.m. Eastern availability, at least in some places. So it's kind of interesting that the way the hype is moving, yeah, this thing is still officially unannounced. So of course, it's leaked all over the place, and you would expect that if you have to go through all the, jump through all the hoops to get it ready for release and launch on the same day, there are more people that need to have the phone, so more people that can potentially leak it. But yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how this hype plays off, because we're used to having an announcement and then maybe a couple of weeks later, or Samsung's case, a month and a half later for the S5, then the launch finally comes. So we haven't really had the situation in Android, I think, where a very high-profile phone has been announced and released on the same day.
No, I can't think. We've never had that with anything from any platform. You've always had to wait a week.
10 days for the iPhone, even so.
So that's going to be interesting, because that's, I hate to call it an impulse buy for a $600 object.
But some people are going to do exactly
that. Happens.
Yep. I'm going to say, hey, Phil, buy me a HTC One. Phil, buy me a HTC One. And if I can talk him into it, that's an impulse buy. I just had him buy it because it's available. So smart move.
I think anything under 2 weeks is, like Richard said, 10 days for the iPhone is pretty stellar already if they can do that. Yep. But if we're seeing, Verizon is saying, 1 p.m., check the store or refresh or whatever on the 25th. And like I said, you can at least go to one retailer in the UK and just buy one that day. I mean, even if it's not widespread for another week or two, that's still insanely impressive for a launch, a multi-country launch.
But it all kind of ties up as well, because I mean, even here we've had adverts in the high street outside one of the phone shops for about a week now, advertising the new HTC One with a little pixelated picture of the phone. So it kind of, when you add up all the rampant sort of hype and bits and pieces we sort of see everywhere, it kind of all lines up that it will, that it would be going on sale pretty much straight away, because you're not going to have all this and then get to the event, it's available 2 weeks from now, because you kind of, it's building it. And then if they did, launched it and said, oh, it's available in 2 weeks, boom, it's just, it's just stopped, it's stopped dead in its tracks. So,
well, more importantly, what else is out in 2 weeks? The Galaxy S5.
Right, exactly.
Every single day
they're going to jump on Samsung, so.
Yeah, every single day HTC has their phone on the shelves, and Samsung doesn't, is important, because they're in a tricky situation with that last year when, especially in the US, there was this delay, and of course Samsung, they still had kind of a lead on Samsung, but they had issues with availability and stuff, and they, I don't want to say they squandered the lead they could have had, but they didn't have as long a lead on Samsung as potentially they could have last year.
HTC is in a bad spot there anyway. In the spring, you've got the new Galaxy. In the fall, you've got the new iPhone. There is no good time for them to release a device, so the sooner the better.
Right, and if they can ride the hype train all the way into just store availability, so it doesn't drop off people's minds. I mean, they're just not going to have the marketing train, to build up hype for another 6 weeks after they announce it. It's just not going to happen. And like Alex said, we got a flood of Galaxy S5 pre-orders and information. At least a lot of the U.S. carriers, I think AT&T, U.S. Cellular, and T-Mobile have pre-order dates up. They're not giving exact availability dates, which is funny because Samsung said April 11th.
Well, some of them are. I think AT&T is April 8th, and a couple of the others are like the 11th. So
yeah, it's kind of early April stuff, based on availability or whatever, because, they're obviously going to have to gauge, their pre-orders, and there's different models for all the carriers. But, we have people that are already taking up carriers on plopping down money before the GS5 even comes out. So that obviously gives you an idea of what the market's looking for.
A couple of potentially interesting things for this for HTC. Obviously, the potential for leaks is so much greater if you launch and release on and announce and launch on the same day, and it's actually available to buy. And of course, leaks take the sort of narrative of the launch of the phone and the message of that out of your hands, because if certain features and if people can actually see the device before and officially, then that sort of deflates some of the impact of it when you first show it officially. So it's going to be interesting to see whether It's, you know, obviously it'll have a big impact if and when it's announced and made available on day one. But I don't know. The other possibility is maybe because there's been so much leakage that maybe you know, the impact will be lessened because of that. We'll have to see.
Yeah, it's always, I mean, we've seen this time and time again with leaked devices, though. It's, you know, you can obviously see the hardware leaks from all the pictures, you know, a 12-minute video or whatever it is. But, you know, they're always going to have something that, you know, doesn't, you know, images of the stuff is, you know, that's pretty easy to leak, but, you know, what does it do? That's a little harder to, a little harder to leak. And, you know, they're obviously going to have something to show us. I don't think they're obviously not just going to give up and say, oh, well, okay, everything's announced. Let's just flip the switch and let people buy it now.
And that's the thing. I mean, we talk leaks and, you know, leaked images and videos and all this, but the average public don't necessarily follow all that stuff as closely as we do. So, We've got this gradual marketing campaign that's been building up over the you know, the recent weeks. March 25th is out there on the, like, all the adverts over here, everything says March 25th. So they're starting to put that in people's minds. The fact that it's going to get announced, but they can then go to the store and they can play with it for themselves and they can see exactly what it does. They can feel it. They can play with the software. They can take a, you know, their own close little look at it immediately. That's a big, big deal.
Mm-hmm. So I want to jump into, I guess, kind of a slightly unrelated question here because it's kind of filtered up the top.
Sure, let's get back to it.
Andrew asks, has Google given up on optimizing Android for larger tablets, 10-inch plus? Jerry, answer.
As for...
All right. I've talked to a few people. And I don't know anything. I've heard some very interesting rumors. You know what I can say about that is, imagine a Google Play Store that had just the Nexus tablet. That's something I think we all should imagine. Not no size attached to it, just called the Nexus tablet. And that's really all I can say. I can't, you know, if... This may not be true, number one. Number two, if it is true, I don't want to get anybody in trouble. But there's a lot going on in the tablet space, in the Nexus space, and the Google space when you put them all together.
Cool. Let's leave it at that.
So it was good. Do you guys have any other Q&As that you've picked out here as we transition a little bit? I'm looking through.
Let's see.
I've got one here. Ryan asks, is a quote-unquote Nexus Android Wear smartwatch necessary?
I don't think so. Not right now. I mean, I think, like we were saying before, that the equivalent of the Nexus watch is going to be the G Watch, by all appearances, because that's going to be the, you know, the basic sort of bare-bones Google watch built by LG. I don't know. It's going to depend on whether they become more... Yeah, how the market progresses and how they're going to become more mainstream over time.
I think it matters
what the Nexus brand just is in general. To every person.
It matters what Google's going to, you know, I think we touched on it earlier with Samsung, what the interface can, how it can change, what the interactions look like, and if they're really set in stone, you know, is the software experience on the Moto 360 and the G Watch, you know, and, you know, subsequent watches, obviously, are they going to interact the exact same, or, you know, are there going to be quirks?
And it's, you know, a Nexus phone wasn't necessary until somebody saw that phones like the Moto Click and the HTC Hero were selling, and they were very far different from quote-unquote stock Android, so they needed to put some sort of reference device out there. You know, the... I don't know how much vendors are going to be allowed to customize an Android Wear device, if at all. So I don't know if we're ever going to need a real reference other than, like this year, Alex is saying the G2 or the G Watch feels like a reference device, and I agree. I think that's probably good enough.
Yep.
Let's see. Anybody else have a Q&A? I'm trying to read through enough.
We had one from Steve Schrouder, who's asking about the if we can advertise the podcast in GMT. If you, they should always be, should always be within the post. It's not usually in the headline, but if you click on the announce post, you should always see it at GMT time. We're struggling at the moment because the Americans have changed their clocks. And
yeah, I guess for that it makes sense. If
I try when I write it, I even go to a website and verify the time instead of just guessing.
Oh, the guesses are so much fun.
Let's see.
No, we had kind of a related one from was it Gun Keeps Popping Down? Thomas writes, do you think HTC could out a smartwatch on the 25th? I think they will, but it's an interesting question what they're going to do now, because there have been rumors circulating. I think one of the US, one of the major newspapers had something on HTC making a Google Now watch. And of course, you know what Google Now watch is, it's an Android Wear device, right? HTC is obviously on board with that. So, I don't know, it's supposedly coming before the end of the year. There's an interview with Xiao Wang and Peter Chow where they were saying that the problem with battery life and display has been solved, so it's going to be out before the end of the year.
That makes me want to see it so bad to see how they solved it.
Yeah, it's especially since, you know, we know that Android Wear is, you know, has to have been in the works for a long time, you know, where it, you know, if HTC was on that train or if they were already on their own path like Samsung was.
Yeah,
maybe it's a secret charging method. That's how they solved it. The body heat, battery topped off.
Right. So Jerry's referring to the Hangout for the Moto 360. They said that there's a secret charging method, and they're not ready to spill the beans on it. So maybe it'll just, you know, it'll run off of oxygen or something.
It runs off of Apple hate.
Unicorn. Put it in the microwave.
Right. Only the true Moto fans can power it up off their wrist.
Hell yeah.
Well, actually, while we're speaking of that, official pricing for the Samsung Gear 2, Gear Neo, and Gear Fit came out. $299 for the Gear 2, and then $199 for both the Neo and the Fit, which is kind of interesting.
That seems kind of crazy to me, given the Neo is basically just the Gear 2 without the camera, and you're thinking...
Right. That's an expensive camera.
Yeah, well, it's basically a smartphone-class front-facing camera. So, what is it? Does that justify the extra $100? I don't know. The Gear 2 Neo is still the way better buy.
Absolutely, and it kind of is surprising that the Fit is $199. Also, with the smaller screen, I know it has the heart rate monitor and some different sensors on it for more fitness stuff. But fitness bands are usually in kind of the $99 to $129 range. And, to charge $199 for that is kind of not sure about that. You know, when you have the bigger is better, right? You have the full featured Neo right next to it for the same exact price.
It's not so much more than the Nike Fuel Band, though, I suppose, at least. And it's probably going to be infinitely more. Well, there's going to be more potential for what it can do than something like that as well. So, there's obviously some kind of market for it, but it will be interesting to see whether or not they can actually corner any decent share at that price point.
Yeah, $199 is definitely the top end. I know that what's the Fuel Band, $150?
Something like that.
Yeah, I mean, it has a screen and has apps and all that stuff, but, with that small screen, it's really targeted as a fitness device, and, it's called the Gear Fit. Obviously. So
it's not a watch for, we played with it at a Mobile World Congress, and if you were trying to wear that thing as a watch, it would drive you insane just because the clock is never facing,
right. It's not facing the right way.
So it's definitely what it's not trying to be anything other than what it actually is, which is a really kind of involved fitness band.
Should say the only UK pricing we have for any of these is kind of insane. One of the carriers over here announced pricing for, they're actually not stocking the full Gear 2. They're stocking the Neo and the Fit, and both are going for £199, which is about $350.
Yeah. Way to not sell any.
Smart. Yeah. I don't know whether that's a Samsung thing, whether that's, a carrier thing, or again, that's the only pricing we have in the UK. I think I don't know of anyone else that is offering that has it up for pre-order with a price. So that may change, but as it stands, the only price we have for the UK is kind of crazy.
In the UK, you pay more for the fitness band than in America we pay for the one with the creep shot camera. Stupid. Yep. Fix it, Samsung. That's stupid.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and so British government.
I think even, I mean, even the, so do we think that they're just going to run into the same wall as they did with the original Galaxy Gear being $299? I mean, obviously we've established that it kind of seems like the Neo is, it kind of makes the Neo seem like a steal at $200 when it's the
Gear 2. Yeah, you imagine you're buying your Galaxy S5 from Best Buy or whatever, and you know you get the usual upsell thing where they try and get you to walk around with the Gear as well. And there are two of these things there, and one is $199, the other is $299. You ask them, what's the difference? Oh, one has a camera. And that's basically it. And are you going to, you know, is the average person going to want to pay an extra $100 for a camera on their watch when they're already buying a smartphone with this awesome 16 megapixel camera? That it's, you can only imagine that the Neo is going to be the better seller.
I'm buying one. I assume all four of us here are interested in having one to play with. I can live without the camera. I can live without the camera. I'm not even considering the Gear 2. The Neo is the only one I considered.
And I think it's just a shame that Samsung's not kind of, you know, Samsung's got a lot of weight, and you know, they could take a hit and really price this thing cheap to get it out there. I'm really surprised that they haven't done some kind of, even if it's a bundle, you know, a proper bundle with the Galaxy S5, that they haven't just thrown everything they can at this thing, cut it down to $99 or something like that, take a hit on, because they need, it's never going to take off unless they get these things out there and they get them on people's wrists. If it's still too expensive for the average person who's going in to buy, and this is kind of, I had a discussion with somebody earlier this week about it with the Android Wear stuff, smartwatches are not mainstream products yet. They are far from mainstream products, and while Pebble's done pretty well, the majority of people that have bought them are probably still tech nerds like us, not, you know, just an average smartphone buyer. So it kind of baffles me a little bit that Samsung just isn't using everything at their disposal to just get these things out there and kind of kickstart it that way.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of not the Samsung way, though. If you look at, you know, any, they don't really do cheap, even for their cheap stuff.
Right.
They want to try and establish themselves as a premium brand. I think, you know, for smartphones and for most stuff, they are a premium brand. But you know, they want to try. I think the way back for them is very, if they start pricing watches at $99 or $150, it's much harder for future generations of stuff to then charge $200 or $300. Whereas I think they know people who are going to buy these aren't necessarily mainstream consumers, so, you know, they can maybe get away with charging a little bit more for the few who are going to shell out. You could argue that hasn't really worked for the first generation of Gear stuff. We heard a lot about, you know, return rates and whatever else. But I don't know. I don't know whether you would expect Samsung for their, you know, this new wearable line, for them to really try and be that aggressive with the pricing.
We assume that there's going to be hundreds of thousands of Gear 2s sitting on the shelf unsold. Maybe they only made 50,000 in a batch. You know, there's a minimum number they have to make, but maybe they didn't just make, you know, they don't have assembly lines cranking 7 days a week, and they don't want or need to sell 10 million.
Maybe it doesn't actually exist, and it's just a ploy to get us all to buy Neos.
There you go. I don't know. It's kind of, you kind of think that after the blunder, I mean, you could generally call the original Gear a blunder, as far as sales go, that maybe they're just a little more timid on it. They think we'll try it again at the same price with, you know, new features, and we'll try to upsell all the stuff. But now we have a full line of them. So like Jerry said, it's okay if the Gear 2 doesn't sell like gangbusters, if the, you know, the Neo comes in and sells, you know, 1 million in the first year, 2 million in the first year. That's pretty good. It's not a high conversion rate based on the number of S5s and Note 3s they're going to sell, but it's still, you know, it's a heck of a lot more watches than Pebble has ever sold.
And they're still experimenting, aren't they? It's obvious that they have, you know, they've paid attention to what a lot of people's gripes were with the first Gear, with the battery life, and, you know, the fact that the camera's on there and it's really bulky, and most people don't want a camera on their watch. So, yeah, I mean, maybe if the Neo is as popular as we think it's going to be relative to the Gear 2, then maybe that model will become the standard, and you'll have maybe, I don't know, the Gear 3 Pro or whatever. It would then be a yeah, the standard would be the one without the camera, and then the sort of the higher end one, if you like, would be the one with all the extra stuff, including the camera.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I think Richard brought up a good point about bundling or something like that. You know, they tried the bundle with the Note 3 and the Galaxy Gear, but it wasn't a discount in price. They said you can buy the Note 3 on contract for $300, or you can bundle it with a Gear for $600. Well, that's not, you know, it's not a bundle with, you know, it's just a bundle.
It's just you buying two things.
Right. A perceived value. And this is going to be the Galaxy S5 is looking to rough out at about $200 on contract in the US. And then the Neo is going to be another $200. So
put the damn Neo in a box with the Galaxy S5, charge $249 for it on contract, right, and just let, you know, postpaid customers that are subsidizing absorb it. That'll get them out there. People would spend an extra $40 if they got this cool little watch in the box with their phone.
I could even see $100.
It's got to come from somewhere, though. I don't know if they're trying to sell to the kind of person who's only going to pay an extra $49, though.
No, that's kind of.
I guess we kind of drifted off topic.
Yeah,
a little bit.
We've generally wrapped up the things that kind of exist, but you can't buy them yet topic. But there are, you know, a few other things happened. Lots of expansion of Chromecast came to 11 new countries, including the UK, of course.
Yeah.
And you can also get the Nexus 5 and the Nexus 7 in like 8 or 9 more countries, which is also cool. We don't really think about those very often because they've been out for a while. And maybe, you know, talk about impulse purchases again. Obviously, the Chromecast is, you know, infinitely impulsible. Anything else that happened this week that you guys think is worthy?
I think it's kind of interesting with all this doom and gloom talk about the Nexus line, where, you know, they're still pushing it out more and more internationally. It's still a big deal for Google getting these, getting their own Google stamped Nexus stamped devices out to different parts of the world.
And it's a big deal for people in those countries as well, because some of the, obviously we kind of cover the countries that we know about, but, you know, it's buying a phone is not as easy in all parts of the world. And for some people, it's a really big deal that they could go to Google and just pick up this unsubsidized, plain Google phone, just click buy, have it delivered in a box, and get it with no questions asked, no commitments to any carriers or anything like that. So.
You go to some emerging markets, you have two choices. You have a fairly bad phone that costs about $100 US, or you go the other way and you can buy an iPhone or a Galaxy S4 and you'll spend $800 or $900 US on it. It's nice to see Google offer something that's easy to get and right in the middle. Performs really well, and it's not outlandishly expensive. That's important for people that want a little more than they can get with that $100, lightweight phone from Samsung or Nokia.
Mm-hmm. So kind of an interesting question from Peter Weber in the chat. How will major Android updates be handled in the distant future for Android Wear devices? I guess the suggestion here is it going to be another case of, oh, you're waiting for, 5.2 for your Moto 360, and it's someone's G Watch has already got it, and that's just an extension of the frustration with updates that a lot of people still have.
We have a gate crasher.
Oh well, hello there.
What's up? What are you guys doing? Podcasting without me? How about that?
We have a gate crasher.
Oh, I guess we could have invited Phil.
I see how he is fine.
Who's this guy?
That's my brother behind me. Say hi.
Hi, brother.
He's hanging out playing with stuff. We're working on some things. So it looks like you guys have done pretty good, huh?
I think we got by.
Oh, we did all right.
Fair enough. All right. Well, I just wanted to come say hi. I didn't want to miss the entire show this weekend. I think you've heard enough from me this week already, though. So
we could say featuring Phil at the end of the podcast.
That's right.
It's like one of those spin-off shows where they get one of the original cast members back, isn't it?
Yeah,
thanks, I think. Did I just get fired?
So is he again? Joni or Chachi?
All right, you guys keep up the good work. I'll see you later.
Okay, later.
Later on, Phil.
How do I hang up? How do I leave you guys? I almost quit the entire podcast.
No, don't stop broadcast.
Cool.
Just put something over your webcam.
So
for anybody that was asking, there's Phil.
Yes, and I think we were talking about Android Wear device updates, right?
So do we think that's going to be a whole different mess? Is it going to work any differently to the way we currently know it for phones and tablets, I guess?
I mean, you have to think it's going to turn into a situation where, I mean, no, not every Android Wear device is going to be updated at the exact same time on the exact same day. I just don't think that's just the logistically from different manufacturers. It's just not going to happen.
It would not surprise me a bit if you told me that the LG G Watch and the Moto 360 ran exactly the same firmware. That wouldn't surprise me a bit. It's just a matter of the assets, the shapes, and you could pack both into one ROM. The firmware could be very small, and it could be a deal like with the Talk today. The Talk got updated. You update the app through the Play Store, you hit a button, and it updates the firmware on the Talk. The Pebble works the same way. I could see that. I mean, it doesn't the firmware that runs on an Android Wear device doesn't have to be 400 or 500 megabytes. There's just no need for all that in there. It could be very small, easy to manage, and all get pushed out at once. Or it could be the cluster mess we've got today.
I see how it could. I mean, I guess it makes sense, assuming that Google holds these devices to a very strict standard, like you said, that, you know, all, you know, by the end of the year, say we have multiple watches, you know, 3, 4, 5, they all run basically the same ROM. They just change a couple things in the naming and make sure that it runs and they push it out. I still don't see it happening in the same day where, I mean, that would be the, you know, wonderful Android Wear utopia that, you know, we'd all want to live in. But I mean, the only way I see that happening is if they hold them to a strong, you know, a really strong framework. And then, like you said, they push out the update through the app that you run on your phone, and it just pushes it to first thing you connect to.
And I don't want to see Google hold ODMs and OEMs down. I want Android Wear to be able to be touch wizified, if that's the way you want to say it. You know, that doesn't mean I would want to buy one that wasn't, you know, pure. I hate to use words like that, but I want somebody to be able to try and make it better. I want that. I really hope that happens.
A couple of things to bear in mind. Google, I mean, I guess the general wisdom is that you can't have it both ways. You can't have something that's easy to customize and also fast updates, because if you allow manufacturers to just get in there and tear everything apart, then you know, that has to be put back together when there's a new version that comes out. But there's also the fact that Google knows how much of a mess Android updates are on phones and tablets, and if they're designing Android for a new class of device, maybe they've tried in some way to work around that, or at least make it so that there's a little bit more stuff that, you know, I want to talk about skins or whatever, stuff that lives on top of, you know, the core Android OS is a little bit more modular and easier to update separately from the OS.
And Android Wear is not a phone. It's pretty lightweight. There's not a lot that an OEM can customize.
Right. You know,
has to work the same way. It could be different colors.
We had a question here. Ryan said, do you see Android Wear devices requiring being connected to an Android smartphone? And that's kind of what we're looking at. Maybe not required. It's not like you disconnect Bluetooth and your watch just turns into a brick, but it's not going to be doing a lot of local processing. There's limited, if any, option to install apps to the device, as we talked about before. It's really just going to be pulling information off the phone, which
it's kind of like with a Pebble as well, isn't it? I mean, if you don't have your Pebble connected to your phone, it still tells the time. It's still a watch.
Yeah,
it still runs local Pebble apps, I think.
Yeah. So there's got to be some kind of very, very basic local functionality, but it's not, presumably these things aren't coming with a cellular connection, so you're going to need it connected to your phone to do all the cool stuff like pulling your emails and Hangouts and all that kind of stuff. So
you can install APKs to the developer preview, the the emulator that they've provided. You know, nothing works. It's needs everything is designed for a phone. But I don't think that that's how this was designed. I think this was really built as a second interactive screen that works with your smartphone.
I totally agree. And that's what it should be, right? You don't need a separate. It's a waste of energy to have something that's a separate computer on its own in your on your wrist when when you know most of the time you're going to have your watch, your phone available to you anyway.
Now, if you slap a SIM card slot in it and make it stand alone with its own data connection, that's a different story. Then you may want it to do a few more things because people will want it to do those things. But this is, I mean, it supports Wi-Fi, Bluetooth, NFC for connectivity. There is no cellular spec in the, you know, what we've got so far. So it's really designed, and right now designed only to be paired with an Android phone, but I'm almost sure that's going to change.
You see it being, an Android sort of client, an iOS client app so you can use it with an iPhone?
Yeah.
You think that's going to happen?
Yeah, just like they did with Glass.
Right.
It's going to take a while to get it to work and then to get Apple to approve everything, but I think that'll come.
Right, you're not going to get, you know, this. It's not just going to work with the notification listener like it does on Android. They're going to have to do some kind of roundabouts for notifications. But
you hook it to the notification center like Pebble does.
Yep.
Well, do you think that's enough Android Wear talk here?
That's probably going to wrap it up.
Enough for at least this week, right? I'm sure there'll be plenty more.
We might have phones to talk about next week. You never know.
Yeah, seriously. Well, exactly. Next Friday we have a lot.
Well, Richard will. I saw him take a picture of where he can go buy it on the 25th.
Yeah, I'm not there on the 25th, though. I'm in London, so.
Where somewhere else we can buy it on the 25th.
Oh, there you go. All right, unless you have anything else to go with here, I think I'm going to throw it to Alex to wrap it up.
Okay. Be sure to email us at podcast@androidcentral.com. You can also find us all on Google Plus and Twitter. The site is at Android Central. Phil is at Phil Nicholson. Jerry's at GB Hill sometimes. I'm at Alex Dobie, at Andrew Modnick, and at Ricker666. And you can follow all of our other writers on both platforms as well. It's brought to you by Ever as shop by shopandroid.com. You can call them 888-468-6158. And I'm going to leave out the voicemail because I don't think we've done voicemail that number for about a year.
And so, we swear we're going to do podcast emails. It's just the Q&A works so the Q&A works so well, and
it's just a much better system.
I will pester Phil, and if we have enough emails, and this is, you know, a general hint, if you want us to do it, make sure we have enough emails. Maybe we'll do an email audio only podcast and answer all the questions.
No
promises, but I will
podcast script.
I will pester.
Interesting. Okay. Well, this is news to me, so now we're... Or will it just be you, Jerry, just on your own?
It'll be just you.
Letters to Jerry.
No, just stop. No, he's
drinking,
wrong. Andrew whiskey. Is fired. He's wrong.
Okay,
I think that's probably going
to
wrap it up.
Time to hit the big nuclear red stop podcast button here, but we will be back next week with even more interesting stuff, and maybe even Phil Nicholson taking the reins here.
It'll be interesting.
All right, Jerry, Alex, Richard.
Andrew?
Till next time.
Mission accomplished.
See you guys later.
Bye-bye.